Welcome to the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight, the podcast where we uncover the secrets of CEOs, entrepreneurs, and visionaries who've used public speaking to skyrocket their businesses and their bottom line. Get ready for captivating stories, valuable insights, and practical wisdom from the trailblazers who've mastered the art of the stage. I'm your host, Kelly O'Hara, and I'm thrilled to bring you their experiences and expertise directly to you. Let's get started. Welcome back to the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight. I'm your host, Kelly O'Hara. And if you've ever wondered why some voices command the room while others fade into the background, this episode will be of interest to you. Today's guest, he doesn't just talk about communication, he engineers it. At a time when everyone's overwhelmed, distracted, and juggling one too many Zooms, the leaders who rise are the ones who know how to make their message land. That's what Naaman Mian helps them do. He's worked with global brands Meta, Amex, Pfizer, Hershey, and trained the kind of people who run the meetings you hope to get invited to. Whether he's advising political campaigns, running high-stakes training sessions, or speaking at Fortune 500s, Naaman's work centers around one powerful idea. If you can't explain what matters, no one will follow you. From the inside track on executive coaching to the storytelling moves that turn data into impact, we're diving deep into what it actually takes to lead with clarity in today's attention deficit world. And yes, public speaking plays a massive role in all of it. Naaman Mian is the Chief Operating Officer of Management Consulted, one of the world's providers of consulting skills training, where he manages a global team, runs partnerships with powerhouse brands like CVS, Mozilla, Motorola Solutions, and so many more. And he serves as editor-in-chief for a media platform with over 4 million readers and listeners. But beyond the titles, Naaman is a powerhouse communication coach. He leads more than 100 workshops a year, helps Fortune 500 executives sharpen their message, and coaches leaders on how to be persuasive without sounding robotic. He's got political background, a sharp strategic lens, and a straight-talking approach that cuts through the fluff, which is exactly why I wanted to have him on the show. So without further ado, Naaman, welcome to the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight.
Kelly, thanks so much for having me. I'm on the road all the time speaking. Can you come and intro me every time? Because that was very generous of you.
Oh, it comes from an incredible background that I have researched. And I'm telling you, that could have gone on for 3 pages and 10 minutes. But I wanted to get you going because you just cover so many things that are so important to this audience. So listen, you've worked in politics and nonprofits and now corporate communications, exactly a straight line. Tell me what the through line is that helped you connect the dots in your own career.
Yeah, Kelly, great question. To be simple and straightforward with you, the through line is clear communication that gains buy-in and motivates action. So early on in my career, I learned that data wasn't the differentiator that everyone thought it was. And as you think about even today, you've got ChatGPT, you've got Excel, you've got, we live in a world that's drowning in data. Everyone has access to data. What they are not adept at doing is understanding how that data applies to their context. And so what I learned very quickly is that if you can extract insights from data and communicate them in a way that will get people to buy in, that it doesn't matter if you're an engineer, if you're an internal finance person, if you're in politics, if you're in the nonprofit world, if you're an executive, that's like the one transferable skill that transcends all others. And that's been the through line of my career. And it's served me well in multiple different industries where I've had to get up to speed quickly on different jargon. I've had to get up to speed quickly on different business models. I've had to get up to speed quickly on different stakeholder groups. But the one thing that served me well is understanding that if I can't help my audience apply what I'm teaching them or what I'm communicating to them, then I'm not going to build the trust I need to build to be successful.
Absolutely true. I love this. But I've got to ask you, did you always know this was your purpose? Did you walk in knowing this is what I was meant to do? Or did you discover it through frustration or inspiration or somewhere in between?
Yeah, I discovered it through really frustration. So, to be honest with you, Kelly, growing up, I was used to being the smartest person in the room, and I didn't realize for a long time how bad that was for your career and how bad that was for your personal growth. And I realized early on in my career that being the smartest person in the room, A, I couldn't count on that all the time, and B, that's not actually what drove change. And so I think what you learn in school is that if you get the right answers, you'll succeed. And one of the things that I had to learn very quickly in the real world is that there's often no such thing as the right answer. There's a right answer out of a menu of options. And the answer that wins isn't even always the strongest one or the best one. It's the one that the most people believe. And so the people that I saw succeeding were the people who could turn answers into stories and the people who could rally people around a common cause, a common path forward. And I started to identify very early on that, oh my gosh, I think my idea is better. I think my approach is better, but it's not the one that's being taken because people don't believe it's the best. And so there's a difference between perception and reality. And I found that the storytellers are the ones who were advancing in their careers, the storytellers that were the ones who had more influence with our clients, with our leadership. And I started to piece together, oh, there's more that matters than just being right.
Interesting. I read that you had a real epiphany that storytelling is one of the most underrated leadership skills out there. And your job as a leader is to connect the dots. So I'd love for you to share the narrative behind the numbers. I love that. Whether you're talking to your board or your peers or your employees, your customers, if you can't communicate what matters, no one's going to listen. How did that epiphany really change the trajectory of your career? In other words, were you always a great storyteller, or did you figure out, whoa, this storytelling thing is the key, and now I've got to learn this? Is it innate to you?
It is now, but it wasn't always. So I've learned over the years to just intuitively start to put myself in my audience's shoes. I did the same thing before joining this conversation today. Okay, who's Kelly? Who's her audience? What are they going to care about? Because I could talk about a lot of things that nobody's going to care about who's listening today. And so it's intuitive now to start to think through, okay, out of all the things that I could share, what's going to actually matter to this group of people at this point in time? And if you are not innately a good or effective storyteller, it's usually not because you don't have good content. It's because you're not sharing the right content with the right people. And so I always start like my communication with three basic questions. Who's my audience? What do I want them to do? And why or how do I want them to do it? And so even before coming on, your platform and your podcast today, I had to ask myself those three questions. And the answers are predicated on my answers to those three questions, and hopefully your audience will tell us at the end that I did a good job of anticipating what they cared about.
Wow, can I tell you something? As a podcaster, and you know this, as a podcaster, I know on my side how I'm preparing for my guests. There's a lot of effort in finding out about your guests, what's important to them, what points they would like to make. A lot of times you don't get a lot of information. That was not the case with you. But I love that you mentioned that, and I really want to highlight this for the audience that's listening. There's a gift, there's a skill set to being a host, and there is as well to be a great guest. And the fact that you prepare so well to be able to address my audience, I think puts you hands above many others who don't think about it. It's not about, we're always trying to tell people, and we coach our clients, listen, it's not about you. Get on the stage. It's not about you. It's about your audience. And even if you're trying to build your business out there, you really have to speak to the crowd and what they're interested in. So I just really appreciate you making that point and showing them how it's done. I think that's magic.
A lot of people think that to be a great storyteller, you need charisma. And I think that's like the special sauce on top. What you actually need to understand is who your audience is, what the value is that you're bringing to them, and then what you want to do with what you're sharing. I think a lot of poor communicators, they communicate to inform instead of to like motivate people to action. And we don't need more information in our world. And I'm speaking really directly right now to a business audience. I have a lot of people who come to me and they're like, look at all this data, look at all these facts. Doesn't this make you want to do something? And I'm like, no. What am I supposed to do with this? Like, all you're doing is drowning. I'm drowning in data now because you've just given me a bunch of facts and figures. You haven't told me what they mean to me, how I should change course because of them. If more information is all people needed to make good decisions, we would never have doctors who smoke because they know better. And the same is true in the business world. If you are like being elevated into a place of being an advisor, if you want to be an advisor or a leader one day, your audience, your stakeholder group probably already knows all the options that they could pursue. Your job is to help them choose the right one. And so your job isn't to share everything, it's to share the right things, and it's to bring prioritization to the table. And a lot of poor communicators, they over communicate because they're sharing too much instead of sharing the right things. That's been my experience, at least, especially in the business world.
Boy, I sure do second that. You're right. And it's about being memorable. What are people going to remember? They're not going to remember your facts and figures. They're going to remember how you connected the dots for them and then showed them why they should be motivated to move in the direction you're trying to get them to go. So you're absolutely right on here. I love that. I wish you would elaborate a little bit on, because so many of us have to get out there and make presentations. And boy, is there a difference in how people present. It's such a big subject, and I've been on both sides. I've been on the side where they're making the presentation to me, and they either want from the company I'm with to spend a lot of money with them, or I'm on the other side where I want them to spend money with me in order to get on and sponsor my event, whatever it ends up being. I love what I read and what I've seen from you. I'd like you to elaborate on the four things that matter more than anything when it comes to a powerful presentation. Share with us those four things in detail.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Kelly, the first thing that I'll just mention is you have to be answer first. We live in a world where we're talking to smart people, but they have the attention spans of a fly because they are moving from meeting to meeting. They're probably joining your meeting virtually, which means they have like kids coming into their office or they've got notifications dinging on their phone. Like, there's so many things that are competing for their attention. And so, in the first 5 minutes, if you cannot tell your audience why they're there and why it matters to them that they pay attention, you've lost them. I call that answer first. I didn't come up with it, but it's something that I employ on a daily basis and I train on a daily basis, is leading a particular presentation with your key takeaway. That's number one. You shouldn't leave me guessing. I shouldn't be wondering what the punchline is at the end. And here's what happens if you employ that approach where the punchline comes at the end, is you end up sharing all this information with me for the first like 45 minutes of a meeting. Let's say we're in an hour-long meeting. And as you're sharing all of this information with me, I'm a smart person. If I'm paying attention, I'm coming to my own conclusions about what that information means. And so then you get to the end and you hit me with your punchline, and I'm like, oh, that's not how I interpreted that information. I thought the answer was X, and you're saying it's Y. And so we end up misaligned at the end of the meeting instead of aligned. And now I've only got 5 or 10 minutes to try and change your mind, or for us to try and get to some kind of alignment. It's probably not going to happen in that short amount of time, which means we have to do my least favorite thing in the world, which is schedule a follow-up meeting. And that follow-up meeting's probably in 1 or 2 or 3 weeks. And all that's happening in that interim time period is that your opposition to my interpretation of the story is hardening because you're a human being. And of course, you think you're right and I'm wrong. And so when we jump into the follow-up meeting, it's twice as difficult for me to get you aligned because your way of thinking is hardened over that 1 or 2 week period since we last talked. And so what I would rather do is come in and say, Kelly, here's 2 minutes of context around why we're having this conversation. Here's the problem that we're here to solve today, and here's my proposed answer. And I'm just going to tell you right up front what it is, and I'm going to take a few minutes now to walk through why I think that's the right answer for you. And what's going to happen is you're going to have an immediate reaction to that. You're going to say, I've heard this before. Or, you know what? No, that sounds too expensive. That sounds like it's going to take too much time. That, whatever your objections would be, right? You're going to share them with me early on. And what that's going to allow me to do is in real time reallocate our meeting time and focus to what you care about. You just told me what you care about. You just told me why you might not agree with what I'm saying. Great, I'd rather hear that in the first 5 minutes of a meeting so I can address those things throughout the rest of the time we have together. And so answer first doesn't just clarify for your audience what the key takeaway is. It also is a great tool to uncover objections early on. And you want to uncover your audience's objections early on so you have time to address them. And so I know you asked me for my four keys. I've only just given you one so far, but I'll just pause there and see if you've got a reaction to that.
Oh, I have a big reaction to that, and you're right on the money. I can't tell you how many times I've had I've been had to sit through presentations. It's one thing when you're giving them, and the other side is having to receive them. And usually the people that you're presenting to, if there's a lot of money involved or a major partnership, they don't have a lot of time. So if you spend the first 30 minutes giving me your bio, I can't tell you, media presentations where people bring in decks and they've got 20 pages of how great their media station is, how much coverage they have, how much, I don't care. What are you going to do for me? What's exactly, what are you going to do that is going to work for me, that's going to help my company? I don't care about your bio till after the fact, till I have to then justify to whoever I have to talk to say, this is the company to go with. And they have a stellar background. They have a pedigree, gorgeous pedigree. But I don't even care about that until I know, how's this going to move my company ahead? And so I think what you said was right on the money. Yay, you.
I do so much presentation coaching, as I'm sure you do as well, Kelly. And a lot of the teams I work with, even inside the Fortune 500, they fall into the trap of selling features instead of outcomes. And what I mean by that is, hey, like, one of the features of this relationship is that you get to work with us and we're so awesome. Look at all the things we've done in the past. Look at who we are. We're a big brand name. And what you are doing is you're talking to me about why you're awesome instead of talking to me about how you can help solve my problem. And so the big mindset shift that I help teams make is, hey, outcomes matter first. Right? And your audience, your stakeholders, they have a set of metrics that they're managed to and they're being held accountable to. And so if you can put a story together that talks through how you can help them achieve those metrics or drive those metrics, well, then you've got their attention. And then the features serve that story. There's a place in the story to talk about why you're awesome. But if the whole story is about you, you've got a big disconnect between what you're saying and what the audience cares about.
Percent. And let me piggyback off of that as well, is know who you're presenting to, know their company. Don't walk in with something generic. Walk in with something that's specific, that you've done your homework and who you're talking to and what will serve them and what they do already. So you can see if you're just bringing in some kind of duplicate situation, you're wasting everybody's time. What sets you apart and what makes you unique? I love what you're saying. People struggle through presentations. And if you're just trying to do a ChatGPT presentation, you will have not established your voice either. So I think one of those, make that point. I love that you say executive presence. Explain to the audience what you mean by that.
Yeah, to me, executive presence is the ability to carry yourself like the peer of the person you're talking to. And if I'm walking to a meeting and Kelly O'Hara is the big stakeholder, then I need to walk into that meeting and act like I'm her equal, whether I feel like it or not. And I need to position myself as her peer. And so a lot of people think, hey, executive presence, again, is this charisma, or it's about eye contact, or it's about tone or diction. And like, that's partly true. But to me, real executive presence is being a clear thinker. That's how you set yourself up as being the peer of the person you're talking to. And when you are answer first, what you are doing is you're clarifying your own thinking. You're setting up a North Star in the meeting. You're saying, this is what the entire meeting is driving towards. It's driving towards getting us aligned around this one thing. And that actually makes you a better presenter when your thinking is clearer. A lot of people come to me and they're like, I'm a poor presenter. And I'm like, great, let me see your slides. Let me see your collateral. Turns out you're actually not that bad at presenting, but you're presenting such unclear, dare I say, crappy work that even the best presenter in the world would have a hard time like spinning that into a narrative that's persuasive. And so what comes first is the structure. What comes first is the clarity of thinking. And then you can focus on some of your verbal presentation gaps. But if you don't have the structure and if you don't have the clarity of thinking, it's like putting lipstick on a pig. And yet, to me, executive presence is first having that structure and that clear thinking. And then the second part of executive presence, Kelly, is being able to handle objections. And so like when I put a stake in the ground early on in a meeting and I say, here's why we're here and here's why I think it's important to you, there are going to be people who disagree with you. And being able to say, Kelly, hey, that's a great point. I thought you might say that. Why don't you unpack that for me? And like just being able to like accept objections in the moment and not have them like pierce you and make you cry and just hang your head in shame because someone disagreed it with you. Like executive presence is being able to have a hard conversation with someone and not lose your self-esteem. and say, hey, tell me about that. Where's that coming from? This worked for one of my other clients. I have an evidence base for why I'm saying what I'm saying. This is what I'm seeing happen in the industry. Tell me why you don't think it's going to work for you. And being able to draw some of those objections out, those disagreements out, handle them in a way where you are learning is to me executive presence in action.
Oh, beautiful. And the fear, people have fear of the objections. If you look at it as a negotiation, how do you feel about that? I look at these things like, okay, your no is where the yes begins. Now it's going to be interesting to see if we can work together and find that common ground. I don't know how you feel about it. I like the game of negotiation. It's interesting because it's finding out what's best for both parties to be able to work together successfully and be excited about it, which you're an expert at. And I enjoy that more than anything else. And then always knowing that you got to leave something on the table. Everybody in the room's got to leave something on the table. It's just, it's enjoyable if you look at it that way as, hey, look, we're finding our way to come together. At least that's my spin. So strong delivery is really important to you.
It is. And I like that framing. To me, I look at it as intelligence gathering. The more I know about my audience, the better I'm going to be able to serve them. And the more curated and tailored I'm going to be able to make my story. And when you object, I view it as a gift. When you disagree, I view it as a gift because I'm getting another insight into how you think. I'm getting another insight into what you care about. And that ultimately is going to help me at the end of the day.
And I love that you say a gift because it is. It's confirmation that they're engaged.
And early on, I actually don't, like early on in a meeting or an interaction, I really don't care about disagreement. I care about apathy. And so what I need to make sure of is that you're engaged. And if the way you're engaging with me is by disagreeing with me, I don't really care yet. So like, I'll get us to alignment. What I first just need to know is that this matters enough to you to share your perspective.
Brilliant. Yeah, brilliant. If they share their perspective, they're in the game. They haven't left the room. They're engaged. Oh, that was beautiful. So you've also said every leader is in sales, whether they know it or not. Break that down. I would love for the audience to hear your breakdown on that one.
Yeah. You are always selling, Kelly, no matter what you're doing. I think a lot of people think of sales as a dirty word and they think of salespeople as sleazy. And so I always get pushback when I talk about sales or when I talk about how everybody's a salesperson. But to me, you are a salesperson for your ideas. You're a salesperson for your approach. You're a salesperson for your team. You're like, if you're going and asking for budget for something, if you're going and asking for headcount for something, what are you doing? You're selling. And so no matter what role you play inside of an organization, if you want to be successful and if you want to be influential, you have to sell. It doesn't mean that you're always selling dollars and cents or that you're always selling products and services, but you are always selling ideas and you're always selling yourself as credible and as an advisor. And so I view every opportunity when I'm talking with my clients, with my partners, with my own team as an opportunity to become better at persuasive communication. I try not to be a leader internally who just makes people do things because I say so. I like to have a more collaborative team environment. And for that to be true, when I ask people to do something, even if they work for me, I have to sell them on why I'm asking them to do it. Hey, this is a priority this week because of this thing that's happening. I'm asking you to do this on top of everything else you're doing because dot. So even when I'm setting priorities for my team, even when I'm asking them to do things, I am having to get their buy-in on why I'm telling them to do what I'm telling them to do and why I'm putting a deadline on it. And so that's sales. And of course, I'm selling to my clients and my prospects. I'm also selling up. I have people I report to internally and externally. And when I ask for things, when I want certain things, I'm selling. Here's why I'm asking for this alignment. Here's why I'm asking for this approval. Here's why I think we should reallocate this budget. I've got my priorities inside the organization. Other executives have their priorities, and I am selling my priorities against theirs sometimes. And to me, if you are in the professional world, every interaction that you have is either a chance to enhance or hurt your credibility. And that at the end of the day is sales.
Well said. I have to say that was beautifully said. And you're right. When you're, that's a leader you want to work for because they bring you in on the process of why what they need from you is important to them. That what you're requiring is necessary and they're part of the plan. And that makes them a more enthusiastic participant. Then you know quickly.
Yes, true. And it's a mindset shift a lot of people have to make is Okay, no matter who I'm communicating with, like in a best practice sense, I should be telling them clearly what I expect out of this interaction and why it matters to them. And if I'm not checking those two boxes, then I'm not yet a clear communicator. And so actually with your team is a great place to start. My North Star for me for communication, Kelly, is not, oh, Kelly walked away agreeing with me. It's that you walked away understanding what I was saying and why I was saying it. And if you're breeding confusion wherever you're going, then you're going to cap your influence and you're not going to be a very good leader.
Fantastic. Really good perspective. What's the most, with all the experience you've had across multiple industries, what's the most common communication blind spot or spots that even the top level execs don't realize that they have?
Yeah, great question, Kelly. The first one is what I've already mentioned is they sell features, not outcomes. And so they talk about why they're great. They talk about all the work that they did to get to an answer instead of just leading with the answer. And one of the things that I've learned over the course of my professional career is nobody cares how much work you've done. They just want to know that the work that you did led to something. And so if you're trying to convince people that you're right, or if you're trying to convince people you've done a lot of work, then you're going to take a different communication approach. But if you're trying to gain buy-in and motivate action, then you're going to tell a shorter story because people don't need to know everything you've done, and you're going to lead with the key takeaway. And so you have to decide what your goals are. And for me, like my goal is to be influential. Like I'm going to be honest about that, but I'm going to be selfish about it too. My goal is to have my work matter. And so to get other people on board, I have to take a little bit of a different approach than the purely academic approach, which says, hey, share all the work that you did, share all the things that you looked at, give me like a 100-page paper. Nobody's got time for that. Nobody's got attention for that. And so mistake number one is people share too much and they sell features instead of outcomes. Mistake number two, Kelly, is that they really, even if they internalize the fact that they should lead with a key takeaway, they don't understand that even if you have the same key takeaway for different audiences, you might have to use different reasons to convince them that's the right key takeaway for them. And so this approach that we're talking about today, like a lot of people like who are listening could be like, okay, great. If I just put my key takeaway first, I'm doing what Naman is saying and I'm checking the box. And that's step one. Like you should lead with the answer or the key takeaway first. But step two is to put a curated story together behind it. So another challenge that people face is they're like, okay, I'll lead with the key takeaway. I've got 25 reasons why that's the right thing for me to be talking about. I'm going to share all 25. And they start to get the order right, but they still miss the point that the goal is to tell a very tailored and curated story. So you don't just have a key takeaway now, but you also have what I would recommend a max of three reasons why that's the right key takeaway. And so there are probably 23 reasons why what you're saying is true or right. What are the top three for that group of people at that point in time? And that's how you really start to clarify your own thinking around, okay, what really matters for me to share? And then it also focuses your analysis. So one of the things that I like to do is I like to put a draft of my story together before I've looked at a lot of data. And I say, okay, here's what I think the answer is going to be. I'm a subject matter expert. I do this all the time. Like my first guess is probably going to be like directionally correct. So let me put a story together. What do I think the answer is for this audience? Why do I think that's the answer? And now I can go look at the data to prove or disprove the initial story I put together. And what that does is it increases the efficiency of my analytical process. So just to tie a bow on this, the kind of like the two major mistakes I see leaders make is number one, they don't tell a curated and tailored story to support their key takeaway. And number two, they don't use this as a workflow planning tool. They only use it as a communication tool. So like when you think about your analysis and the work that you're doing, lead with a key takeaway, even in your analysis. Be hypothesis driven. What do you think the answer is? Why do you think that's the answer? And then go let the data inform whether you're right or not. Otherwise, what you end up doing is you end up looking at the data first, and you never know when you've looked at enough because we all just have so much information at our fingertips all the time. And it's really difficult to start at the information layer and turn that information into a story. You have to come up with the structure first. And then, if the data that you find disproves your initial story, great, go back and reshape it. That's no problem. But you'll figure out faster where you're wrong and where you're not. And that's actually going to help you get to the right answer faster as well.
is what you do to get ready before you're doing any kind of talk or high stakes session, or you're going to take the stage. So I would expect this kind of strategy is great when you're trying to speak with clarity under pressure. It sets this structure up to really accommodate a little bit more comfort when you get up there on the stage. Have you ever felt nervous getting up on the stage? Have you ever felt, I can't see you feeling overwhelmed before doing it. You seem like such a natural speaker. Did you ever have that fear?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember, I think I was running for student government like in ninth grade, and you know, I had to get up there and talk, and I was so nervous. I think my like voice cracked three times when I was making my like election pitch in front of the school. Like it's not something that's come naturally to me. It's something I've had to grow. And so are there natural born speakers? Probably, but that wasn't me. I was nervous when I was younger. My voice would crack. I didn't ever thought that I'd want to be in front of people talking. But I learned quickly, like, this is probably like the most consequential 21st century skill that anybody could build, because it's one thing that AI can't replace. They can't replace a human perspective. It can't replace a story. And if you want to thrive in this economy that we live in now, you have to learn how to be able to communicate. And so now the choice is up to you. Do you want to go through the discomfort of growing, or do you not? But at least you can be intentional with the decision that you're making. No, was not a natural. I had to grow at it. And to me, the only way to get better is practice. So the more reps you get, the more comfortable you get. I still get nervous before I get up today. Last Thursday, I was up in front of 100 senior level executives talking to them about communication. And so you still get the butterflies in your stomach. But you still kind of get the adrenaline going. I don't know if that ever completely disappears, but you build that like literal muscle memory. Like your body knows, hey, I've done this before. And your mind knows, I'm prepared. And then you can just get up there and you can execute your plan.
Practice. Honestly, do not get up there and wing it. Practice. And that muscle memory is so critical. It just makes you more comfortable in your skin if you understand your subject matter. I love that you said that. It's so powerful for everybody to hear. Now, I'm curious, as you speak about the corporate side of life, and you know that I have great familiarity with that. That's comfortable. But now we're talking about political campaigns. How is that different in your world?
Yeah. When I work with teams inside of the business world, their goal is to, like I've mentioned before, gain buy-in and motivate action. Hey, we need our clients to do something. We need our executives to greenlight something. Like, we need action fast. When it comes to political communication, your goal is a little bit different. It's to evoke emotion. And like, I need Kelly to feel a certain way so that she'll vote for me or not vote for the other guy. Right. And so the goal is a little bit different. Now, I still have to be incredibly clear. Like, I still have to say, Kelly, you should vote for me, and here's why you should vote for me. And if I've done a good job of targeting you, if I've done a good job of researching you, then I'll know what you care about. I'll know, okay, you know what Kelly really cares about is the economy. And Kelly, you should vote for me because of my economic policies. And your daughter, I don't know if you have a daughter, I'm just making it, but your daughter might care about like healthcare policy, right? And so hey, you should vote for me because of my healthcare policy. And you learn really quickly in political communication, like how powerful tailored messaging can be. Like your answer is always the same, vote for me or don't vote for the other guy. But then the reasons that you're giving people differ just based on what they've told you they care about. And so that's really where I learned actually like what the power was of understanding an audience. And then I brought that into the business world. But I think in the business world, it matters less that you evoke emotion, at least in the boardroom. In politics, it matters a lot more.
It's everything. Yeah. Which do you love more? If you had to choose, which is more interesting to you personally?
Honestly, probably business communication. So I still advise campaigns today, but I'm in that corporate kind of Fortune 500 world almost every day. And I just find some of the challenges and the problems that they're wrestling with really interesting. And to me, what clear communication does is it helps you frame, okay, what's actually my problem? It helps align everybody around the problem, and then it helps rally everybody around an answer. And the problems are different at every company. The answers are different at every company. But unless you start to understand the business and the business model of those organizations, you're never going to be able to become a clear communicator. And so just getting a chance to dig into those business problems and help people understand where some of the drivers might be of misalignment, that's really interesting and exciting to me.
Love that. How much is AI playing into what you do these days?
Honestly, not much. So I think what you're seeing is that AI is helpful in helping you get your thoughts out on paper. And so whether you're listening to this and you communicate for work, whether you're like a public speaker who's delivering keynotes, I think one of the real powers of AI is to get your initial thoughts out on paper faster. And what I've found that it does for me is it increases my velocity of in terms of like the iterations that I can go through. So before it's like you got to write everything out yourself and maybe you get three or four drafts in before, okay, I got to go speak. What AI allows me to do is get a first draft out of my head so much faster. And then
Yes.
I'm able to refine it. Now I get eight refinements instead of four. And so it's not that AI is necessarily giving me better content that I could write myself or come up with myself, but it's getting me something on paper faster so that I can go through more iterations. That to me has been the big power of AI in terms of the work that I do.
It's true. It does make things easier. It does allow you to move through some steps faster, but in the end, it's still critical that it's your voice and you have to be part of the game. You can't rely on it because now we've seen so much of it all sounds the same.
It does.
Instantly, when you see it, you go, okay, now you dismiss the person who sent it to you or who's speaking because now you're just like everybody. It's almost like copycatting, right? It
It
feels
is.
inspired.
And it is helpful to ask AI some questions. Like, if you look, I think best practice is always to ask people what they're looking for before you get up on stage and speak, or like asking a conference organizer, hey, what's this conference about? Why are people coming? What do they want to hear from me? So if I'm getting up there and speaking, like I'm addressing their concerns and their desires. But I found AI to be like a helpful proxy for that. I could go to ChatGPT and say, hey, I'm speaking at this conference in Dallas, right, next week. This is why people like bought the ticket. Tell me like what you think this audience would care about hearing. And I'm able to use AI as a proxy for my audience and start to get inside of their heads. I've also found it to be a helpful research tool to do some of those kind of things.
I agree with you. The research is, it really makes that process so much easier. I am grateful for it. For that alone, that is worth it because that can be really tedious, the old way. So this is beautiful. So, you're a brilliant communication coach. Clearly, everybody's gotten a feel for you. Who do you love working with the most? And how can someone know that they're ready for your kind of communication training?
Yeah, Kelly, the short answer is anyone who wants to increase their influence is ready for this kind of training. And that's true whether you work with me or work with somebody else. You don't have to work with me, but if you want to increase your influence, the most direct line you can draw between a skill that you could build and increased influence is clearer communication. And so if you're like, hey, I want more influence at work, I want more influence like in some of the speaking that I'm doing, I want to evoke more emotion out of people. I want more repeat business when I go to speak. Then you're ready for a communication coach. And my favorite types of clients are clients who say, hey, like I do really interesting work. I have a story to share. I have a perspective to share. I have insights that the world needs to know. And I just don't feel like they're landing. And I'm like, great, you already did the hard part. Like you already became an expert in something. You already have a perspective that the world needs to hear. That's the difficult part. Communicating it is relatively easy. And so you might need some guidance along the way. You might need some structure. You might need some tips. You might need some practice. But if you've learned the thing that you're actually good at, then layering on communication ability on top of that's relatively easy. And so hopefully that's encouraging for people who are listening. You've probably already done the hard part. The easy part is just figuring out how to communicate it.
Say I love this because it doesn't sound like it takes forever to accomplish better communication. And do you feel most people are going to walk out of what you provide as a more compelling storyteller?
They are, because they're going to be better at understanding who their audience is, what their audience needs, and then they're going to be able to take their subject matter expertise and their perspective and package it in such a way to where it engages those people. And so that to me is the essence of storytelling. It's just, can you move people to do something? Or can you move people to believe something? And whether you're up on a stage in front of 1,000 people or whether you're in a boardroom of 10 people, you have to be able to do that.
I'll tell you've been hearing back every kind of industry, some of the top in the world. I'd love to know, is there anything that still gives you goosebumps?
Well, that's a good question. You might have stumped me. Is there anything that still gives me goosebumps?
Yeah.
I'll share this, and maybe it's too serious for your audience, but I think one of the cardinal sins of being in like a client-facing context is surprising your clients. And if I'm going to walk in and I'm going to get goosebumps from being nervous, for example, right? It's going to be because I'm walking in and I don't know what my audience cares about. And I feel like I'm going to surprise them. And so that's something that like gives me goosebumps in a bad way, where it's like I'm kind of walking in a little bit blind here, right? And what gives me goosebumps in like a good way is honestly when I have young professionals come up to me. This happened last Thursday. Like I was speaking, I didn't realize that there's like some more junior people in the room, and they came up to me and they're like, "This was really helpful. No one ever taught me this. This is going to help set me up now for the next stage of my career." And that's what I love, right? It is like actually like teaching people, hey, I'll work with the execs, but actually I'd rather work with people in their 20s and 30s because the compounding effects of learning this early are so huge that like I count that as a real privilege.
Fantastic. That is such, I agree with you so much. I love the things that you've shared with the audience today. I think it'll really make a difference. And you're absolutely right. When you're able to turn that light on for someone where they say, I never even knew this was out there. This never came to me before. This is information that's going to change the game for me. What is better for a coach? What is better than that? I don't know. I think it's fabulous. It's not even about the numbers, it's about that realization. Your life has just changed because someone gave you something so usable, so actionable. You're phenomenal. Naman, I really want to thank you for coming on the spotlight. It really gave us such a sharp, no fluff look at executive communication. Seriously, this was a masterclass in clarity and storytelling and intentional delivery, and that they aren't just skills to have, they're the tools that set great leaders apart. I think you've been a gift, an absolute gift to my audience today. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
That was delicious. So many good light bulb moments. I am delighted. And I'm walking away and I can hear in my head going, answer first. In your presentation, answer first. Start from that. That's a different place to come from. A lot of people don't think about. They're leading up to the story of how they're going to deliver the big, scary part, which is, everybody's focused on the price. Can I get the price? Will they buy in? Give the answer first, and everybody will be hanging on what you have to say. I think you just gave incredible stuff. And I also love that we're all in sales. Quit avoiding it. We're all in it. It doesn't matter if it's your title, you're selling your ideas, decisions, strategy every single day, whether it's in the boardroom, on the stage. In whatever you do for a living to your team, it's just non-negotiable. You want to get ahead. So I love this. If you want to learn more about Naman's coaching, or you want to bring him in to work with your team, head over to managementconsulted.com/storytelling, and there are group trainings that you can check out, or you can go to managementconsulted.com/power-presentation if you're looking for high impact individual coaching. I will have both of these links in the show notes. So wherever you get your podcast, know that I will have both those links there. He's really helping leaders ditch corporate jargon and actually connect. That's what makes the difference. And let's be real, it's a really noisy world. That kind of public speaking, it isn't optional anymore. It's essential. So thank you again, Naman, for being here. Please know we'd absolutely love to have you back again. This is the kind of content that makes a difference. And everybody tuning in, if this sparked something in you, please let us know. Help us get the word out there so more people can tap into these kind of conversations. I think they're really helpful. And we're here to spotlight how powerful communication through public speaking can be, not just for the stage, but for your business, your leadership, and the way your message lands in the world. So, thank you again, Naman. Thanks to everybody who joined us today. And as always, I look forward to our next conversation. We'll see you next time.
Thank
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight. We hope you enjoyed this deep dive once again into the remarkable stories and insights of our incredible guests. Their experiences and hard-earned, time-tested wisdom are not just meant to inspire you, but to provide you with actionable steps to take on your own path to success. Remember, you have a story to tell, and your voice has the power to transform your business and make lasting impact. And that's what it's all about. If you found value in today's episode, let us know. And I hope you'll take a moment and subscribe to The Spotlight wherever you listen to your podcasts so you never miss a thought-provoking or idea-producing conversation. I'm Kelly O'Hara, and I can't wait to see you back here for the next episode of the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight.